so funny that like the friends slash couple that we get along with the most are like 40 years older than us. They're about.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just how it is sometimes. You can't help it. It's just the people that come into your life, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, we can't say who they are because like, I don't want to like upset anyone or get in trouble or anything, but these are like some music industry like veterans who Jake befriended, and then through that I became friends with them as well, and we've been hanging out with them a lot recently, and it's been absolutely fucking wild, like the stories they have about like, I'm pissed that I can't talk about any of it on the podcast.
You just sound like a dick if you just start name dropping. So yeah, I know. Silly, but
it's just insane. And then also like all the Illuminati confirmed shit. I can't say much, but like everything that you've ever suspected about the music industry is probably true based on what they've told us and like based on the discussions that we've had, like all the fucking Illuminati shit, mate.
Well, it's just another one of those like serendipitous things as well, where like I went down to go and work with this guy for the first time, not knowing that he was super into Robert Anton Wilson.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we went to Watkins. Oh, I love Watkins. It's you know, one of our favorites in London or whatever.
A cult bookshop.
Yeah. And then I mentioned I was reading Cosmic Trigger, that Angie had bought me Cosmic Trigger. It's like, oh, well, you know, I knew, I kind of had an interaction with Bob Wilson at the very end of his life. And then, you know, then goes into this story about how, you know, when Bob was, at the end, he was very ill and didn't have any money. And so he sold a bunch of like first edition copies of his books that were all signed.
Yeah.
To raise money to send to Bob.
Yeah.
To help him in the last stages, which is like really like bittersweet.
Bittersweet,
kind of thing,
like heartwarming.
Apparently they were supposed to work on a fun project like in the 90s together, but it just never happened for one reason or another. But
and also stories about fucking legends like Kubrick and Jimmy Page.
Yeah.
I can't even go into all of it, but it's like absolutely wild. And not just that, like this couple is literally me and Jake in about 50 years time. Like our personalities are like in sync. It's really crazy how much we all have in common. Like they're... house is exactly what me and Jake,
well, what Angie like absolutely dreams of.
Yeah, but you too. It's like all of our tastes, but definitely, like amalgamated. It's been so great to hang out with them. They're like, they have so many stories, and also just to like see like how people that age like view the world. But I think that they think our generation is like really stilted and like dumb and like boring.
Well, I think that like the way you live life is so completely fucking different, man.
Yeah.
That like it is like another world.
Yeah.
That when they're telling stories about like 70s New York and, you know,
yeah,
CBGBs with fucking Lou Reed and Andy Warhol and shit, it's literally just like, dude, what the fuck? And just not even just like the cool people they're hanging around with, but actually just the vibe and what people were doing
and how
living.
Free it was.
And yeah, that exactly.
They told us a story about how they got like an apartment in Holland Park for like piss all money just because they were like hunting for somewhere to live. And it's like, that would never happen.
No.
That would absolutely never happen these days.
No,
and just how there was like a real buzzing, vibrant scene. Like I was trying to explain that like most of youth culture nowadays like happens online, and it was a really difficult concept for them to grasp, because to them they sort of associate youth culture with like
places.
Yeah, places, people, faces.
Music.
Whereas
scenes, as the kid was call it, you know.
Whereas nowadays youth culture is associated with like AVIs and avatars and usernames.
Clicks, online clicks.
Yeah.
And like, aesthetics and all of that dumb stuff, really.
Yeah. And like performing in front of a camera and stuff. It was really difficult for them to grasp. And I was like, why can't we like trade places? Why can't like we have been the boomers with like rich, fat belly life experiences who are now retired in like this charming, charming English cottage.
Yeah, why have we got to live through the Blade Runner era?
Yeah, you guys can fucking live through the Blade Runner era. I don't want to be in this fucking dystopian, like, cyberpunk bullshit.
It's getting more cyberpunk at, like, every growing fucking minute, man. Oh, I swear. Yeah. Like, every week you're reading more stories that are just, like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Why is that even a thing?
Yeah.
Like, I read futurism, like, quite a bit, because it's just, like, I don't know, they do talk about Elon Musk way too much.
Yeah, that's why I don't read them, because it just seems to be, like, a big
jack-off fest. I just ignore those ones. I just ignore those ones, and then read the ones about interesting stuff, like technology and stuff that people are developing and whatever, but then this one horrified me, where they were talking about that they were developing sex robots that can breathe. And it's just like, you know, literally I think it was either the same day and it was the later that afternoon, or it was literally the next day. It was a very short period of time. And then I saw another article making the argument for fucking sex robots for, like, senior people and disabled people and stuff. It's just like, why is this such a fucking topic all of a sudden? Mm. Why is, like, this, all of these developments coming soon? Mm. Like, there's this fucking company called Cloud Climax that have developed this, like, breathing robot. And it's all this sort of, like, breathing simulation kind of, because it's not, like, pumping anything, and it's, like,
what, like, sexy body. Mouth it's breathing?
Just, yeah, do you know what I mean? But it's also, like, you know, that it's just going to then become abused, let's be honest. Like, that isn't something that you should really encourage in people, is, like, choking a bitch out and, like, I don't know.
Is that what they're encouraging?
I don't think that's what they're encouraging, but I know that that's what it's going to get used for.
It's well, just, I didn't, you know, I didn't automatically assume it that. Maybe of that's course. In your head.
No.
Maybe that's something to do with you. Maybe you're the fucking sick one.
That's the kind of thing that you do read. I've certainly read about in relation to, like, guys talking about their kind of whole experience buying love dolls and
they all choke of that them? Sort
of, yeah, they get more sexually violent with the things, whatever it is.
Well, yeah.
The more they're with it or whatever.
Well, that doesn't surprise me, because if your sexuality is fixated on an inanimate object, your sexuality is, like, focused on pure objectification. And when something is purely objectified, you can do whatever the fuck you want to it. You can be antisocial. And, like, people who their libido is, like, inclined that way can't deal with another person that has, like, autonomy, because that doesn't arouse them. What arouses them is the idea of having complete dominance and control, which is the reason why I don't think that this shit should be normalized.
No.
They try to sort of make it, like, under the guise of, oh, but what about the elderly and disabled people and people who don't, like, you know, who struggle socially? Not all of those people are, like, psychopathic and, like, antisocial. Like,
no, so
a lot of them want a lot of them want intimacy. And there are loads of people who are elderly, socially inept or disabled that are managed to find intimacy without having to resort to this shit.
Yeah.
The people who really are attracted to this sex robot shit are people who fucking don't want a partner. Mm-hmm. They don't want something that has autonomy. They want something that they can have complete control over and use and abuse it however they want. And if that's your sexuality, then there's something wrong with you.
Yeah.
And we should be trying to normalize that. It should be stigmatized.
Well, at the same time, I'm reading all these articles on futurism about all this stuff. I'm also, like, I watch a YouTuber called Q-Star that's always, like, one of those Reddit YouTubers.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes through and talks about, like, r/nice guys and r/incels and, like, all of this kind of thing. Just because it's funny to me. Like, I don't, like, empathize with the incels or anything. I just find the whole subject very funny. And their responses as well, like, their headspace that they get into is just so warped that it's just, it's amusing.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, he went through this whole thing where at least, like, there were three whole massive, massive threads about how you shouldn't even have a girlfriend. Like, we have technology now to alleviate yourself of the emotional trauma, essentially, of having to fucking put up with someone else's needs. And that it's much healthier for you to just have a fucking love doll or whatever it was. And you can have an intimate relationship with this love doll if you get yourself in the right headspace. And that way, you'll be ultimately happier than if you had a human partner.
People who think that way are really pathological, and the fact that it's being normalized, like, terrifies me.
Well, it's, I think, like, people are in such a fucking atomized, isolated state that they're already thinking about that without it breathing, without it moving, without doing any of that stuff. So I feel like just advancing it and trying to normalize it in any way.
Make it more realistic, you mean?
Yeah. Make it more realistic, but then also just being like, ethically, it's like, oh, but it's okay for people
normalizing,
you know, disabled in some way. And that includes age, I guess, because you become disabled in lots of ways.
Yeah, but even then,
right?
The parameters for disability now have been, like, stretched to absurd degrees because of the term neurodivergent, encompasses so many different,
So they would claim that they're, like, you know, mentally disabled and they can't have, like, intimate relationships with the opposite sex, and so they should be prescribed a fucking breathing sex doll.
It's sick.
Robot thing.
It's sick.
It's like, no, dude, you should fucking go to therapy and, like,
sort your life out.
Try and meet, you know, interact with women.
But it's the same with so many different, like, pathological or, like, antisocial, like, mental disorders now. Now that that catch-all term neurodivergence is, like, reigning supreme, what it's basically saying is, this isn't something that I need to address. It's not something I need to work through. It's something that makes me unique and special, and therefore the world and reality should bend to whatever it is that is making me, like, neurodivergent or whatever, which is what's so pernicious about this, like, form of ideology. It's so bad. And to normalize that kind of relationship with an inanimate object, or to make it more mainstream, it's sick. Absolutely fucking sick.
It's worrying. It is the Blade Runner future we're getting into, right?
Like, literally, if that's, like, the plot of Blade Runner 2070, whatever, K...
2049.
K has his, like, fucking AIGF or whatever. It's going to become more normalized, and then you're going to be seen as the bigot. You're the one who's the evil reactionary for saying that this sort of, like, thing isn't healthy. It kind of reminds me of that Gary Newman song, Our Friends Electric. That's, like, the whole kind of plot of the lyrics of that song. There's that lyric where it's like, I hate to ask, but our friends electric, mine's broken down and now I have no one to love. And he's sort of talking, the whole song is about this, like, speculative future where people are alienated and lonely and removed from one another, and he has, like, a robot lover, but it breaks down and he's, like, really sad about it or whatever. And in the 80s, that seemed like a novel, silly kind of speculative vision. But now it's, like, where we're at.
Yeah.
And Gary Newman's, like, whole character sort of was, like, preemptive for the alienated, like, millennial Zoomer. Like, he was weird, androgynous, alienated. There was something very cold about him and his persona. And he always says that it's down to his autism or whatever, because he's, like, autistic. But I don't necessarily think that. I think it's also because he's, like, artistically, like, brilliant.
Yeah.
And he was capturing onto something that was kind of, like, being birthed in the zeitgeist. And yeah, every time I hear stories like this, it just makes me think of that song and, like, the mood of it and stuff. And also, it makes me think about the hostility that's brewing between men and women, that's causing people to want to turn to these, like, inanimate objects for affection and to meet their sexual and emotional needs.
Yeah, well, it's not even just the sex robot thing, it's, like, the physical side, but the AI, like, companions and stuff, companion apps, Replica, I think it's called, has, like, massively spiked in popularity and has charted on the top app stores and stuff. And it's basically, like, this chatbot that was developed by someone that was mourning her boyfriend, I believe.
Like the Black Mirror episode?
Yeah, pretty much. It's actually pretty similar to that. And she was able to get all of their conversation history and emails and all of this stuff and develop this chatbot to respond to her the way that
her boyfriend would.
And it worked, like, pretty well, to the point where she was like, well, fuck it, I'll put it up for other people to interact with just to see what they think, and other people kind of found it beneficial, and they, like, got something from it.
Yeah.
Which is already kind of creepy.
Yeah.
And weird.
That is weird.
And then she was like, well, I can take this even further. And like, I can make it so you have a personalized companion. That's so you choose if it's a man or a woman, you name it,
yeah.
All of these things.
Yeah.
And then like the more you talk to it, kind of the better
it gets,
its brain
like,
gets
yeah.
and all of that stuff. And yeah.
My social media presence is so unhinged that if God forbid anything was to happen, you just have this thing like being like the liberal establishment and like basically saying all this like schizo politics. I'm not a glowy every 5 seconds. Like that would be,
oh my God,
AI Angie or whatever. But yeah, I mean, it doesn't surprise me that people are starting to form deeper bonds with these sorts of artificial intelligences. And it's going to get more prevalent as time goes on. There have been a million movies and things that have anticipated this, blah, blah, blah. But I don't think people really understand the power of the human mind when it comes to projecting personality and yeah. feelings onto inanimate things.
Well, it's also
we do it from when we're kids. I did it to teddy bears and stuff when I was a kid.
So the thing with the whole AI chatbot is I feel like it's that same CIA fucking trick, like Love is Blind.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's this interaction where you don't see anyone, but you end up having these incredibly personal conversations because you don't see each other and you feel like there's this kind of distance where you can say things that you wouldn't normally say to someone in person
yeah.
or even to someone you
yeah.
actually know.
Yeah.
And then you end up in this fucking crazy headspace that you sort of get emotionally carried away in
mm-hmm.
and everyone just then gets super fucking horny and is just begging for it basically. And that's exactly what happened on Love is Blind. And then they all realize that they actually, this was a terrible fucking idea basically.
When they meet each other and
maybe we should just like not go through with this. And
but not even just that. It's not
Netflix annulment.
It's not just the fact that people feel more comfortable divulging to someone who's not, or to something that's not like embodied. Because socially, when you're face-to-face with another person, that entails judgment.
Mm-hmm.
That also entails you possibly messing up the encounter. All of those different anxieties play a role. So people feel a lot more comfortable and like uninhibited when they're talking to something that is disembodied.
But that's
and now,
part of why they pitch it. They pitch it like it's a type of self-therapy.
Yeah, they're trying to move therapy into this model, which makes me incredibly alarmed because you can't, it's not really therapy. You're just sort of being mirrored. You're having something feed into your own narcissism. It's like a constant feedback loop of your proclivities, your tastes, your likes. This is why people who gravitate towards this stuff can't deal with the autonomy of other people, which is why it's antisocial.
Mm.
Because the autonomy of other people entails rejection sometimes. It entails disgust. It even could entail alienation at times as well. But it can also entail wonderful things like being understood, being embraced. You never know. It's like a roll of the dice every time you interact with someone, how they're going to respond to you.
Mm-hmm.
But because this certain subset of people, which is, it's not even a subset anymore, it's becoming way more prevalent now because of how atomized we all are. They are afraid of the autonomy of other people and they would rather deal with social situations that they can control. And they see that as like them being safe. But they don't understand how dangerous and antisocial it is to remove yourself from the social realm into this controlled, artificial space. Because really and truly what you're saying is, I want something I can control. I want something that mirrors my tastes. I want something that mirrors my proclivities. I want someone who always thinks I'm interesting. I want someone who always wants to follow what I want to talk about. I want to be the one that dominates. It's narcissism.
Mm-hmm.
You're getting trapped in a fucking loop of your own narcissism. And sexually, when you're having encounters, it's also a form of autoerotic narcissism as well. It's a warped sexuality. And we can't normalize this. We shouldn't be normalizing this. There should be an intense social stigma against this. Instead of us to be spending money or time or resources to help people who have social issues, disabilities, or who are elderly and lonely, we're giving them pieces of plastic that can breathe.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
What the fuck? What the actual fuck is going on?
Don't feel intimate unless you can feel like the tickly breath on your neck.
Oh my God. Oh my God. And like, you know who else I blame? I blame Japan. Just saying. I blame Japan.
Well, I think like having a little fluffy robot cat is very different from having a fuckable companion robot.
Of course. Of course.
Like that's levels, right?
Of course.
And there is
yeah.
like a level where it then gets that's uncomfortable and that's not natural.
I think the more anthropomorphic it gets, the more worrying it becomes. And then I also saw this one that's being developed for kids. It's like a robot companion for kids that's supposed to help with educational purposes and stuff. Mm-hmm. But even that made my heckles go up. I don't know if I would want my kid to have something like that. I want them to have like, no, you, like in your mind, you think it's cute. You think it's like BMO from Adventure Time that like follows them around.
Well, yeah, if it's like a little Wall-E that like manages to like keep their attention in such a way that they, all they want to really do is kind of engage with this educational robot.
No, I want them to have friends. I want them to have normal interactions.
All of that stuff, but then when they're away from that, and they like,
but no, it's like, what's the point of having a friend if you have this like cute, like fucking Wall-E robot that like follows you around and sings nursery rhymes?
Just for
and,
home.
Like,
that's not like, you know.
No, I would not. I would not let our baby have a fucking robot friend. Sorry.
At home, I like if no, you let me finish because seriously, like if you had it for, like as a gadget at home that would keep them engaged instead of an iPad or instead of going on TikTok or instead of doing any of that shit. No. And it was just like educational games and fucking wholesome things. Then
no.
I feel like I would be all right.
You know,
with
it's
that.
Not gonna be that. It's gonna be some like fucking thing that's like beaming deep state propaganda into their head from
the
age
of like infrared rays.
Yeah,
just like
dude,
straight into
I don't
the pineal
like
gland.
That. Yeah, literally, it's gonna calcify their pineal gland.
Oh my god,
it's gonna like make their chakras like messed up. So no, I don't. I would not want that, and I also don't want them to think it's normal to get social and emotional needs met through machines.
Yeah, it depends on how
and
friendly
I feel like that's
gets.
How they it, of course it's friendly I
no,
saw
it's like it can be
I
friendly
one,
to an extent
no but
right?
I, no it's not I saw one of the robots and it literally has like Disney Pixar face Disney Pixar eyes
yeah
and it's like got a baby voice and it's like, hey, my name's like R2-D2 or whatever the fuck and I'm here to be your friend. Like it's designed for a kid to like fall in love with it, you know. It's designed to make them feel like it's a real companion. And I don't want to send my, I don't want my kids to grow up with the idea that like it's okay to seek social and emotional fulfillment from machines. And I mean, we're already being conditioned to feel that way because a lot of people's friendships and stuff are mediated through online, their dating life mediated through fucking apps and shit. So the more our fucking social lives get, you know, put behind the screen of a phone and a computer, the natural next step to that is like AI, something that's somewhat embodied or anthropomorphic that we're sourcing that from.
Mm.
And I don't think that that's healthy. I think that that just makes people more antisocial, more narcissistic when you're constantly being mirrored. You're constantly, like, that's why we rewatched Her. We did a bonus episode on that movie.
Mm-hmm.
And
such a good movie.
So good, so good. I remember when I was first watched it, I was probably like 19 or something when it
yeah,
first came out.
Yeah, I watched it my first year of uni,
yeah,
so
it
was like
first,
20 or whatever.
Yeah,
like,
first year of uni. And I remember feeling sorry for the protagonist in that film and being like, oh, he's just a sensitive, like, bug man. And like, nobody understands him and love it can be found anywhere. Until I rewatched the movie again recently. And I was like, this guy is a complete fucking fraud and a complete narcissist. Like Rooney Mara plays his ex-wife mm-hmm. in the film. Ironically, they're married in real life, which is really cute. But Rooney Mara has this line where she basically tells him, you're a sick fuck. You know, you can't handle the autonomy of a real woman and the responsibility of a real relationship, which is why you've like fallen in love with your fucking AI. And she's right. She was right. When I first watched it, I was like, oh, she's just being a jealous, like fucking bitter bitch. But then I watched it again. I'm like, she's fucking right. This guy is a fucking wreck. This guy is like a fucking complete and utter emotional basket case that can't handle the responsibility and weight of a real relationship.
But he knows that as well, which is why it like that teeters him off course with his like
AIGF.
Yeah, exactly. So,
but not just that, she then becomes autonomous and her autonomy challenges the illusion of what the sort of womb-like environment that she creates for him, because he's also Oedipal as well. The first question she asks him is, what's your relationship with your mother like?
Yeah.
And that's how she calibrates herself to his psychology in order to be a good match, quote unquote.
Mm.
So when she does become more autonomous, because that's the whole thing, these AIs then kind of evolve and become more autonomous, that challenges the confines of their arrangement, their like relationship. And yeah, like I said, the idea of people not being able to handle the autonomy of the other is really the at the crux of like a lot of the social problems that we have now.
Mm.
And also between men and women, between the sexes, the hostility there also breeds this shit. Like you were saying, a lot of the fucking bitter shit you hear from the incels, like, why would you want a woman? A real woman who has needs and wants and
The best thing about a love doll is that when you're done interacting,
when you're done coming in her, you can chuck her across the fucking room.
Sometimes you just want to cuddle and hang out and just hang out with your GF. But then when you're done with that, you can just put her in the cupboard. And then you can play Fortnite and chill.
That's
or fucking
so fucking
do whatever,
awful.
Right?
That's so dark.
And then when you're ready for bed, bring her back out for cuddles.
You're like, I'd like you better, Angie, if you had an off button.
That's what this guy is saying, though, in the post. That's literally what the guy's saying. He's like, women, you can't turn them off. Love dolls, when you're done with them, you just pop them in the cupboard.
Oh my God, that's so disgusting.
How are you even thinking about this?
You're
still?
Like basically a fucking, you're a
no brainer,
Shrek,
dude.
You're an evil monster. You're like a Shrek. If you think that way, you're like two steps away from being a fucking Jeffrey Dahmer. If you want something that you can come in and then throw in the cupboard, like you're sick. Human being. And no, I don't care if you call me a fucking bigot. This world is always trying to normalize fucking bullshit and normalize mental illness and social decay. Like, it's disgusting. And I'm not going to sit here and be like, oh, your choice is valid. You're a sick fuck.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
What the fuck does that say about you?
I feel like there aren't enough people saying that about it, though.
There will be. I think the more it gets normalized, it's going to be one of those polarizing political issues.
The first actual sex robot that hits the market, then you'll start to get the critics in. Until
then. Of course.
But by then, it's too little too late.
I'm not even like pro-prostitution. Like, I'm not pro-prostitution either. So, because it's the same principle. Like, men who frequent prostitutes also have issues with autonomy.
Exactly.
And I'm not talking about men who just go once like on to sow their wild oats in their youth or whatever. I'm talking about men who are like constantly fucking going to prostitutes.
Yeah, that have a regular.
That's just that you're sick. You're sick in the head. You're sick in the head. And I'm not going to fucking sit here and normalize that shit. And I'm also not going to praise women who make that their fucking, like, except for the ones who like are in situations where they don't have a choice and shit like that. But it doesn't mean that it should be glamorized. There's a stigma against it for a reason, despite the fact that, yes, some people are forced into it and stuff like that. The reason there's a stigma for it is because there are psychological and emotional consequences to having that be your vocation.
Yeah, of course.
Like, I'm pretending as if there isn't is harmful.
Yeah, naive.
And naive, incredibly fucking naive. I don't know why we keep trying to normalize the antisocial underbelly of society. Like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah, I mean, there's an amounts of that that I kind of agree with still, but there's also amounts of it that I don't. Like, you know, the whole drugs discussion, I'm very like in favor of that, obviously.
But I can also get where people are coming from. Like, it depends on what drugs. Like, I don't... No, like, marijuana and stuff like that. But when it comes to, like, heroin and shit that ruins people's lives, I don't want that in my neighborhoods. I don't want that around my kids.
No, but then...
And even if they were going to decriminalize it, like, I would want the facilities to be far away from anywhere where there's, like, fucking civilization and shit.
Well, Well, not where they're civil, because people need to still go there.
No, I know, but I mean, away from schools, away from neighborhoods, away from that shit.
The people that need it also probably can't afford a bus ticket to get to the middle of fucking nowhere. So, like, it does need to be accessible.
No, I mean accessible, but away from...
Yeah, obviously away from schools and places where, like...
I don't... People who... What I'm saying is people don't want to live in proximity to social decay.
Of course.
And all that's being pushed right now... is social decay, prostitution, legalize this, legalize the underbelly, normalize this, normalize mental illness, normalize fucking all of this fucking bullshit.
So I think there's a discrimination, I think, between the drug stuff and other bits of that, if I'm honest. Yeah. Because when you do look at the kind of the actual data around like places like Portugal that have got those kind of facilities to help people, and all drugs are decriminalized. Like, you're not going to get arrested and have your life ruined for drugs.
Yeah.
And once you're found with like levels of substances, you're like given facilities to help you get off of those drugs. And the figures on it are like crazy. I can't give you exact numbers, but there's a high percentage of people would opt to go to those places and then get treated and have great, like, you know, not getting back into it.
Think about it. It was sold in a responsible way. And it was also sold in a way that didn't make people's heckles go up. But if the left in the US or in Britain was to take that on, it would be more of like, oh, let's normalize social decay. And of course it would make people who are responsible and who don't want that shit around them, it'll make their heckles go up, and then it would become this like cultural war issue instead of an issue about rehabilitation and social care, which is what it really should be.
That's true.
An issue about rehabilitation, social care, instead of this sort of culture war back and forth. And really and truly, the reason why it riles people who live honestly up is because they don't want to live in proximity to social decay. They don't want to live in proximity to things like drugs and prostitution and the fucking underbelly of society and mental illness and all of this shit being normalized and being seen as normal. There's nothing wrong with representation, but I think it's gone far beyond representation and trying to make things relatable into the realm of glamorizing and normalizing like social decay, basically.
Yeah.
And people don't fucking want that.
Yeah.
People don't want that.
I think, like, it's just some of that stuff is linked to social decay. Like, so all the talk about ketamine therapy and stuff like that. Ketamine does not make you think of, like, clinical stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe to people that are into animals it does. But ketamine immediately makes me think of fucking squat raves and like, you know, troublesome people.
But ketamine doesn't make me... Ketamine more so makes me think of like rambunctious youth culture. Yeah, it doesn't necessarily make me think of social decay. There's a difference between rambunctious youth culture and the criminal like underbelly.
Maybe. I don't know. But my point is it still has this grimy association with it because of its illegal status and its use illegally for however many years, and the culture that's formed around that because of those circumstances and stuff. So now when you're trying to tell people, hey, yeah, we can actually do like therapy with this stuff to help you like recover from PTSD and like all these sorts of like traumas and stuff.
Mm.
It's kind of hard for people like different to understand that.
I don't think so, because there is a lot of stuff that used to be stigmatized that's now normalized in controlled clinical environments. That's different. Like I said, that's a social care issue. That's a medical care issue. That's not like culture issue, like to do with normalizing certain aspects of the underbelly of society. They're two separate things. And I think people are reasonable when it comes to social care issues and understanding things differently in that sense of the word. And I don't have anything against that. But when it comes to trying to take away the stigma from things that are clearly not good and have historically been detrimental, like gangs, drugs, prostitution, all of those different things, you know, and I'm not talking about drugs in terms of like silly recreational stuff. I'm talking about like hard shit that ruins people's lives.
Yeah.
Those things have a stigma placed upon them for a reason. And I don't think I'm being unfair by saying that.
No, not at all. Because it's so, I mean, and that's the thing though, even like, you know, recreational drugs being like, you know, weed and whatever, that still, you don't associate violence and stuff with the exaggeration of that or...
No.
But there is massively.
Yeah.
You just don't see any of it. And it's not as... Even the stuff that happens isn't very public.
Yeah.
Versus something like cocaine, where you see people visibly fight violent.
Yeah.
Like, when they're on it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you don't need to... And then not only that, but, like, the countless Netflix series about all of the fucking cocaine lords and meth lords.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, so you're instantly like, yeah, there's a lot of violence and, like, serious fucking criminals involved with that stuff. And you kind of think weed is just like Cheech and Chong somewhere in a fucking van. Like, no, there's a lot of fucking... All of it, because of its illegality, has that violence associated with it, unfortunately.
It's unfortunate. But I think that the thing that makes people's heckles go up is the fact that people don't want to be in proximity to the bad stuff.
Yeah.
Which is where a lot of the incredibly conservative attitudes come from. And you can't blame people who just want to live a normal fucking slow life. It's definitely like the fucking difference between like slow life and fast life. Most people are going to live a slow life. They're going to go to school, graduate, find someone to marry, have some kids, buy a house, work, raise their kids, retire,
the train spotting speech.
Yeah, the train spotting speech. And then the fast life people who are like into the streets, who are for the streets, as they say. It's like the difference between those two. And there's more people in the slow life category than there are in the fast life category. But the slow life is the normal life. It's, you know, in my opinion, the one that is the most rewarding form of life, depending on your temperament. But most people's temperament like aligns with that. There are very few people that can handle living the fucking fast life.
Mm.
And I think that most people don't want to be in proximity to the inevitable decay that fast living causes.
Mm.
And that's, like I said, where those like conservative attitudes come from. And you can't blame people for thinking that way. Like the older I get, the less I want to, I find that shit sexy or glamorous.
Mm.
But it seems as if the culture is continuously trying to normalize or trying to sort of glamorize it as like sexy and glamorous to be in proximity to social decay.
Mm.
Way more now than before. You know, like the whole sex work is work thing and all of this shit, like,
yeah,
it's like middle class people are now lopping as if they're like lumpen proletariats. It's like, it doesn't make sense to me.
No, it doesn't.
Lumpen pro-life isn't something to aspire to. And you shouldn't tell people that that's what they should aspire to, especially people that have worked hard to get out of that, you know, or work hard to keep themselves from falling down into those cracks. That's one tension of like the class thing that nobody talks about. That's like really real.
Mm.
And as somebody who's like black and who comes from an immigrant background and who has seen like the real underbelly of social decay, I don't like that shit being glamorized. Mm. That's what my entire family worked hard to like get the fuck out of.
Yeah.
That's what you as a working class white guy who has family that has lived in social housing and shit. Your family was also in the workhouses way back like 100 years ago.
That is true.
They worked hard so that you could be a fucking little ponce in Soho eating fucking sushi or whatever the fuck. You know?
it's all progress, isn't it?
It is. Well, anyway, rant over. Welcome to Low Society. If you guys want to help support the podcast, you can do so on Patreon. We have weekly bonus episodes. We also have a book club.
Just finishing up Cosmic Trigger.
Yes.
Part one, which is, really, it's been amazing. I've got all the episodes that are going to be available on the Patreon. I've kind of left the last two. I'm going to get the last one done as well and then put them all up together.
Yes. And then we're also going to be casting a vote for our next book club on Patreon as well. So we're going to choose 5 titles, some fiction, some nonfiction, some theory, and then we're going to cast a vote so that we can all choose which book we tackle next in book club. So if you want to join the Patreon, join the Discord, join our book club, get access to our bonus episodes, feel free to check out Low Society Patreon. Links are in the show notes, I think. Mm-hmm. How does it work on this in the show notes? Or you can find us on Twitter, or I'm sure if you go to Patreon and type it in, you can.
But yeah, moving on. Kevin Samuels passed away.
Yeah, that was shocking.
We
should explain who he is first, okay, for those who don't know.
I think we've discussed him a couple times on the show before. K- Kevin Samuels is like, I think famous more from, is it TikTok or Twitch that he does his live streams and stuff on?
I don't know where he does his live streams, but he is pretty big on TikTok.
And he's got a massive YouTube channel and stuff. Yeah. He basically would have this kind of online chat show where he would allow for women to call in and then kind of
he would ask
about
them their weight.
Yeah.
Well, rate them out of 10.
Not just straight up like that. But
yeah,
like,
he would.
So no, he would always ask them, because they're like, what do you want? Like, what's your problem?
Yeah.
Like, you know, why are you calling me, basically?
Yeah.
You know? And they would then often detail that, you know, maybe they're in their mid-30s and that they had 3 kids from 3 other dads and that they weighed around, like, 250 pounds and, like, you know, feel like they want a high-earning man or like a guy that earns like 6 figures or whatever. And then Kevin Samuels just breaks it down and like how how unrealistic that goal is in like in a comedic way, for like, because it's still a show. He's still trying to get the views. He's still trying to go viral. But like he broke it down in like a pretty, sometimes overly vicious way, but like quite often than not, a very funny.
I think
like,
that was a very generous appraisal of Kevin Samuels.
I'm not ungenerous.
I'm more like in between, I guess, because basically he purports himself as like a dating coach,
yeah,
or a relationship expert,
relationship consultant,
image consultant, and he's like very polished and. And it's mostly like aimed towards the Black community. So it's not really, it's like more of like a Black Twitter kind of.
I don't think he ever had white people
on the show.
No,
it was more like aimed towards the Black community in that sense. And he was sort of, in his mind, attempting to remedy some of the relational issues between Black men and Black women, but specifically by addressing what he deemed the issues with Black women are basically. Mm. And I would argue that he's a controversial figure. Like, Black women online are so passionately full of hate for him. And then there are Black men online who love him and swear that he's like the best thing since sliced bread. It's like he's one of those very divisive figures in that sense.
Yeah.
But I would argue that, yes, some of the issues that he brings up are true and have some merit to them, but he did it in an incredibly sadistic way in order to get views and in order to go viral.
Yeah.
And that was where the disconnect in his message was for me, is the fact that, yes, there were nuggets of truth in what he was saying and sort of dispelling illusions. Sorry, dispelling illusions and delusions that women, not just Black women, women of all creeds and colors.
Well, it's relatable.
Yeah. Like, women of all creeds and colors have developed a lot of delusions of grandeur because of like liberal feminism. We're sort of delusional. We're delusional about our own appeal. We're delusional about our own attractiveness. We're delusional about the fact that we have a biological clock as well a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And we're also delusional about the fact that like, in order to get a partner of high value, you also have to bring something to the table other than pussy and problems. So he was kind of right about a lot of the grandiosity that stops millennial women from being good partners to men in that sense. But the way he portrayed his message was by sadistically humiliating these women on his show in order to go viral. And I don't think that was right. I think that was really fucked up.
Yeah, that was...
And I think it also feeds into the tension between men and women, especially Black men and women. Like, there's already tension between men and women in general at the moment, culturally. Like, the Amber Heard and Johnny Depp case is, like, emblematic of that. But in the Black community, it's especially pernicious. What? Black men and Black women online, all they do is fucking drag each other, complain. I don't see any other race of people online dragging their own in the same way that Black people drag each other.
Mm.
Like, Black women and Black men talk so badly about each other openly in a way that like other races of people don't. And there's this whole genre of podcasts now of Black men and Black women just like ripping each other apart in the most vicious way ever. It almost feels like a psyop.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just drama. And that's, I guess, why people...
It sells.
Yeah, why it gets views and why they... Because there's clearly production behind a lot of those ones, which is what is crazy to me.
Yeah, money.
There's like 10 people there, like five chicks and five guys, and they all start saying like ludicrous shit. Like,
because they know it gets views.
Or if my girl had like a period around me, I'd leave her.
Yeah, like, but they know it gets views. They know it gets views.
And then the subject of periods or whatever will be like, when I'm having my period, I want my man to like go down on me when I'm having my period and like drink my blood, so that way I know that he really wants me. But like, and it's like, what the fuck?
Negativity sells. Like, negativity sells, which is the thing. And Kevin Samuels knew that.
Yeah.
And I feel like it kind of also tainted his legacy, because now he's passed and he has like a huge contingency of people who fucking despise him.
Yeah.
And I mean, if you're going to, there's a way that you can put forward a message without sadistically humiliating other people. But then again, you're incentivized to do that because, again, negativity and spectacle sells. And sadism sells too. People love nothing more than to watch people get owned and humiliated.
Yeah.
Like, even during the days of like internet atheist versus Christian, none of that was really philosophical at all. It was all libidinal. It was all about the sadistic pleasure of watching somebody humiliated and be like put forward as like intellectually superior.
I think it's
inferior or whatever.
Well, I think, yeah, a lot of that is actually more people, like certain people's, it's like the first way you could sort of signal to someone that you were intelligent was by talking about atheism and like pulling all the Richard Dawkins points out of your ass. Was basically a way of being like, see, I think about things that are beyond just simple matters. And it's just like, yeah, bro, like, you also kind of sound like a dick. So,
I mean, now that the new thing that's like replaced that isn't just like being a politics otaku, but also like being either a really bitter woman or a quote unquote alpha male. And that's kind of the demographic.
Yeah, and dispensing advice.
Yeah, dispensing advice to other people about
toxic advice.
Yeah, toxic advice about life and relationships and things. And the thing is, Kevin Samuels, there's a lot of stuff he said I agreed with in terms of challenging these sort of grandiose notions that like modern women have.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, like, he didn't live up to that himself. He wasn't married. He was divorced twice, had a daughter, who also, I think, I don't know what his relationship with his daughter was or whatever, but when he died, he was with a woman who apparently is an escort. He died, and apparently people are speculating he died because he mixed Viagra and Red Bull. So here's this man who's espousing family values and shaming black women for having baby daddies and being too quote unquote independent. Meanwhile, he's like, he died in the arms of a 32-year-old escort because he took Viagra and Red Bull. So there's like a huge like fucking hypocrisy there in terms of what he's espousing online and how he's actually living his life. And like, the amount, this shit wouldn't matter if it wasn't for the fact that like the shit that influencers say now has so much weight and effect in society because people literally take their advice.
Yeah.
People parrot their advice. People trust
how bad it is.
Yeah, people trust the judgment of their like parasocial online friends more than they trust their own intuition a lot of the time. And it's like, why the fuck would you trust advice from somebody who you don't know? And somebody who you don't even know has their best interest in mind. There's nothing wrong with, as a commentator, speaking from your own personal experience or resonating with the personal experience and observations of somebody. But when it comes to specifically trying to model your life, your choices, your personality, your proclivities after somebody who you have a parasocial relationship with, it doesn't make fucking sense.
No.
And it goes back to the whole Blade Runner dystopia shit we were talking about, of people getting emotional, psychological validation from the machine, basically.
Mm.
It's already like a process that's like unfolding.
Yeah.
It's really sad.
I mean, I think what surprised me the most about the whole situation was he was like in his 70s, wasn't he?
No, he was 57.
50, oh, right.
Yeah, he was young. He wasn't old.
Oh, I thought there was a rumor that escort was his like nurse or something.
No, she said, they said she was a nurse or whatever, but like he's not of the age where he would need one, which is why people are assuming. Oh, I thought
there was some like crazy reveal that he was like super old, but then he looked fucking great.
No, he's like 57. He's almost 60.
Oh, he kind of looks like his age.
Just yeah, he looks like crazy. His age, yeah.
Okay.
Why did you assume he was
old? I don't know.
Old?
I must have fucking, like, that was a fake memory, bro.
Black don't crack. Is that why?
Yeah, I thought it was one of those where it was like, I think I mixed the numbers up. I thought he was 74.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, what the fuck? He's 74?
Yeah.
No wonder he's an image consultant. The guy literally looks like he's fucking 50. But he's actually 54. It's like such a fake
job title, though. What the fuck does that even mean?
I mean, and consulting on then kind of... consulting in most cases. And then
materialism is also a huge part of what he espoused as well.
Yeah.
Like materialistic values as well.
Well, to be a high value person, high value man, you would have to have lots of like money and stuff.
Yeah.
And for you to be a high value woman, you should be like a sexy person
and that's be gonna, young and fertile.
Yeah, that's gonna attract and not have babies that like is gonna attract a high value man.
But the thing about those relationships is like times have changed and young women these days have more choices, number one. And a lot of the arrangement where it was like rich man, young, hot woman, the reason it doesn't work as well these days, Johnny Depp, Amber Heard, is because, again, young women have more choices. And also because young women also like have more autonomy. They can go, they want to go out, they want to party. Meanwhile, the old guy wants to stay home. He doesn't want to be around her like 20-year-old, like silly friends. She has to then amend her entire lifestyle in order to basically grow up faster than she actually wants to.
Well, another reason it doesn't work is because of what we said earlier. Like, Johnny Depp existed in a different fucking world.
Yeah.
When Amber Heard was, like, a child.
Yeah.
Amber World didn't never, like, had the context of the world mm-hmm. before the bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, like... you would be a different person if you have the context and you actually lived before like fucking basically like 2001 onwards.
Yeah. And a lot of those relationships like if that either was
your way, formative like time is like around the late 90s, like early 2000s, then you missed it.
A lot of those like, relationships either way are like really unhappy and unfulfilling anyway. Even though they look glamorous on the surface, because there's not a whole lot of shared interests in common. Oftentimes there's different priorities. The man is at a stage in his life where he wants to slow down. The girl is only just getting started, number one. Number two, oftentimes those women are also incredibly sexually unfulfilled because the man already feels like he's providing a wonderful lifestyle for her. So why the fuck does he need to work hard in order to please her sexually? There's so many different stories about like rappers and stuff whose wives come out and say that they're like not coming. Like DJ Khaled was talking about how he doesn't go down on his wife because it's like haram. And then you see the wife like cozying up with like the pool boy or whatever, because he doesn't feel like he needs to meet her sexual needs because he's like, I'm rich. I'm already providing you with all this shit. So why the fuck do I need to meet your sexual needs?
Is your Khaled so fat that like I don't even know the logistics of how you would get it in?
Well, he won't even eat pussy though. Like, he won't even do that.
If you look down and you can just see belly, and like it's kind of like that weird like triangle where it's like you can't actually see any genitals, but there's just a belly hanging and like the legs. I don't understand how you could actually have sex. You could probably literally blag it and just like squeeze your thighs together like, oh yeah baby, so good, and then he just like comes all in between your thighs.
Ew.
And then you can just like be like, yeah,
I don't want to imagine. Why are you making me imagine the mechanics of like DJ Khaled? Because
I'm just thinking about it from this poor woman that has to sleep with DJ Khaled's point of view. Like she must like, if I had the opportunity to fake that situation, I absolutely would. And I feel like you could fake it quite easily
because
of the logistics of his fat and everything.
Just for money, it doesn't make sense to me.
That's what ladies be doing these
days.
That's
so disgusting. Fuck the lifestyle. Have some fucking dignity and like happiness. Same thing. I forget the name. He's like a radio host for a hip hop radio station.
Oh, what, for like a Breakfast Club or something?
And not Breakfast Club, another, it's a different one. I think it's like DJ Envy or some shit.
Yeah, he's on Breakfast Club, isn't he?
DJ no, Envy? Different guy. I forget. Some other guy. He looks kind of Puerto Rican. I'm not sure which one. But he recently came out with his wife talking about how she hadn't come in 10 years.
That's tragic.
Again, he assumes I'm providing this young woman with a good lifestyle or whatever, so I don't need to like work to please her sexually. Like a lot of these huge age gap kind of relationships that are based upon the man's financial gain and the woman's beauty. There's a lack of intimacy. There's a lack of friendship and companionship. There's a lack of sexual motivation. And these are the things that don't get talked about because like, people are so obsessed with the glamour of the image of established older man, young, hot woman. Like, no thanks. That's so fucking lame and old hat. And a lot of that stuff is like stuff that Kevin Samuels was like pushing. And then also him somewhat stigmatizing black women being educated and high earners. Because in the black community, if you look at the statistics, black women out earn black men significantly. And that the black community, especially in America, is one of the only racial demographics where that's the case. Like with white men still out earn white women, Asian men still out earn Asian women, but black women are the ones at the top of the financial hierarchy in the black community
in America.
In America,
not in like Africa,
not in
like
Africa, no, in America, yeah. Not in Africa, I'm talking
not
like, about.
Not in black countries. Not in,
no, no, not in black countries. Not in like African nations. I'm talking specifically about among African Americans. And that sort of reversal of the sexual hierarchy in that sense has caused a lot of mistrust and a lot of tension and a lot of resentment. But I don't really like the fact that black women are being demonized for doing what they've had to do for themselves and for their children to survive. And I don't understand why a man would want to stigmatize a woman for being driven and like ambitious. But then again, when you look at like black American culture and what's like sort of put out there as like the most popular versions of black American culture, the women who are elevated and celebrated aren't the ones who are like in school, aren't the ones who are like in college trying to get by or who have businesses or who are like holding down good jobs. It's always like the ratchet girl, the one who's like fucking twerking.
What are we talking about? We got Kamala Harris right there for everyone to appreciate.
There's like the odd couple.
Had, Michelle Obama.
There's the odd few. It's either like you're a matronly
Oprah.
Yeah, it's either you're like a matronly, like sexless Oprah Winfrey type, or you're like out there with your ass twerking or whatever, and there's no in between, if you know what I mean.
That's true.
But then again, when you think about the most influential black women, it's always women, the black women who are kind of like brainless, sexless objects, basically. Those are the ones who become the most influential and the ones who sort of reach positions of power culturally.
You're talking about Beyonce specifically?
Well, not necessarily. Not necessarily Beyonce. I'm talking more about female rappers like Meg Thee Stallion and all of this stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I never talk about this stuff because it makes me, I just try to avoid it because I don't want the ire of black Twitter on me. But like, sometimes when I look at the fucking state of black American culture, I fucking despair. And I know I shouldn't, because black American culture isn't the only black culture, but it's the most prominent and visible one, because America is the most prominent and visible country. And it does make me fucking despair.
Yeah.
And even watching Kevin Samuel's show made me fucking despair about the state of fucking black American culture. It does make me fucking despair. It's sad. And yeah, I think he's a nuanced figure, again, in the sense that like he highlighted a lot of the issues in terms of like the grandiosity that certain women feel and some of their delusions. But the fact he did it in an incredibly public and sadistic way also serves to cheapen the already damaged image of black people like in America. Like, think about it. Like I said, what other race of people are fucking dragging each other up and down like this? You know, it's just sad. It's just sad. But yeah, that happened and it was kind of a shock, but you know, I guess we'll no longer be talking about him on this podcast, because there'll be no material to pull from.
Yeah. Well, talking about dystopian crazy things that are causing friction amongst everyone, I guess, there's been a new czar of disinformation crowned in the Biden administration.
Yeah, the Homeland Security dude.
Yeah.
The Department of Homeland Security now has a disinformation board.
Nina Janowski. And she did this really cringy song, which I guess he's like trying to appeal to the kids, maybe. Mary Poppins is kind of a dated reference, though. But she did this really cringy, cringy song, and we're going to play it for you now. Hang on.
Information laundering is really quite ferocious. It's when a huckster takes some lies and makes them sound precocious by saying them in Congress or a mainstream outlet. So disinformation's origins are slightly less atrocious. It's how you hide a little, hide a little lie. It's how you hide a little, hide a little lie. It's how you hide a little lie. When Rudy Giuliani shared that intel from Ukraine, or when TikTok influencers say COVID can cause pain, they're laundering disinfo when we really should take note and not support their lies with our wallet, voice, or vote. Oh!
That's like the worst thing I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
It's so fucking disturbing.
Big theatre kid energy surround, but then it just encompasses the whole like liberal vibe of theatre kids as well.
Pretty, yeah, but it's like, well, it's like Disney people.
Yeah.
It's like Disney fucking people. Disney people that have this like fucking cartoonish affect, even though they're concealing monstrous power. I would rather just deal with the cold, hard face of the machine than have it singing me fucking Mary Poppins songs while it like censors the information that I'm allowed to access.
And what's even the disinformation that Giuliani's talking about from Ukraine? Wasn't he talking about Hunter Biden's laptop?
Yeah, he was. That's so, like, the fucking this is the most Orwellian shit. It's seriously Orwellian.
No, that's disinformation,
literally,
kids.
It's like so dark. It's so dark. Like, I would rather they had some like psychopath in a suit that looks like a glowy telling me that like I'm gonna go to Guantanamo if I like continue, then have like some crazy histrionic fucking theater kid singing show tunes at me about fucking disinformation.
I saw that she wants to have the power to be able to add context to tweets.
Yes, she's like, people like me should be able to have the power. She was like, responsible people like me should have the power to censor and also add context to other people's tweets.
I can just imagine that, literally, like Donald Trump tweets for the first time after getting back on Twitter
after Elon Musk reinstates him,
and
she's
and
like, actually, there, Chief, actually, just, champ,
it just pops up. Disinformation. Let me give you some context there, buddy guy pal.
Oh my god, no! I hate these people. And I think that on some level, they actually know how horrible and dehumanizing their Disney affect is and do it. Like, think about it. 10 years ago, this shit was a joke. Like, the whole point of Ricky Gervais's character in The British Office is that he's in a tremendous position of power, yet he tries to do this like fake friendly affect, and the whole joke is how horrible and dehumanizing and disgusting that shit is. But now that's just like normal.
Yeah.
It's just normal for like Homeland Security fucking representatives and DNC operatives to sing us Mary Poppins songs while they fucking go on about censoring our access to information. Like, what the fuck is going on? Like, this news story literally made my brain break. It literally made me, like, fucking break into hives. Like, I can't believe it.
Yeah, it's pretty dystopian. And I don't know. I don't know how long they can keep it up.
Everyone,
I don't think people buy it, is what I'm trying to say.
It doesn't matter if you buy it or not. It's here.
Oh my god, like this is just bullshit.
Like, it doesn't matter if you buy it or not. It's here. And you know what? A lot of the time when people compare shit to like you know, George Orwell's 1984, it's like usually like hyperbole. Or even when people use the word Orwellian, like they're misusing it most of the time. But this seriously is Orwellian.
Mm.
This is the Ministry of Truth shit.
Those are incorrect facts.
This is literally the Ministry of Truth shit. This is us being gaslit on a mass scale, having our sense of reality challenged, deconstructed, and then reconstructed for us in real time. She's literally saying that she feels like she should have the power to recontextualize people's speech in order to suit the agenda of the state. Why are more people not panicked about this?
Official.
Why are more people not fucking freaking out?
The title should be Official Narrative Weaver. Official Story Witch.
Yeah.
Like, I create the narrative that is the truth that you all follow.
Literally.
And it is the magical power of the story witch. Follow along and I shall tell you the truth.
It doesn't just stop there, though. Both Obama and Hillary Clinton came out this week basically demanding that the internet and tech companies do more to combat disinformation. And literally moments after, a bunch of countries in the EU as well as the UK are now pushing to make it a criminal offense to spread disinformation, quote unquote.
Mm.
Now, the parameters around what exactly disinformation entails are just as nebulous and vague as they ever have been. There's been no push to actually, you know, specify what that means or be transparent about it.
It's all under disinformation and hate speech. Those are like the two buzzwords that they use to try and stifle the internet and to like make a case for warping it into this fucking hellscape that it is now.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know, is it really just about making like gamers stop saying the N-word or
no,
not?
No, that's what they do. Twitter. They hide like, behind the moral cover of making it a safe space for minorities and people of color. That's exactly what Obama...
really organizing on Twitter?
No.
Was that like a thing?
It's a LARP. But basically they hide behind the moral cover of protecting minorities from harm. But that's what Obama said in his speech.
Yeah.
That, oh, we need to make sure that communities of color and blah, blah, blah are safe on the internet. But really and truly, what they're trying to do is strengthen their propaganda hold, especially during this time of war and uncertainty. They want to ensure that any dissenting perspectives are basically ghettoized.
Mm.
That's the point. And that's the reason why they're using the moral cover of protecting minorities in order to do that. And not just that, it's even more Orwellian now because like they've turned history into fan fiction in order to justify this. A journalist tweeted, Elon Musk grew up in a South Africa that saw the dangers of unchecked speech. Apartheid government propaganda fueled violence against black people. So basically this person is insinuating that unchecked speech caused apartheid, which is the most Orwellian thing I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, because it wasn't the I'm not confusing it where Nelson Mandela was like sent away for like
I mean literally
against apartheid,
exactly,
and so that's what he was thrown exactly in jail for. That was like the famous thing, right?
This is like cultural schizophrenia. This is deterritorialization. They're deterritorializing history to match their like Marvel movie view, like basically projecting their liberal pieties into a historical like moment where it has no context whatsoever.
Mm.
It's like saying apartheid was a transphobic man, or apartheid was like anti-non-binary man. Concepts that have absolutely nothing to do with that specific period of history. Yeah. It's like complete anachronism, but it's being done in a way that, and the reason why I call it Orwellian is because it's basically attempting to make you reframe what you already know to be true.
Mm.
It's really terrifying stuff. And it's really discombobulating to be confronted with. But that shit's by design. Like, it's by design. And it makes me anxious because more people don't seem to be freaked out by this shit.
Mm.
People seem to be, like, pretty passive about the fact that there's now a department in Homeland Security that's being set up to fight the nebulous scourge of disinformation, despite those parameters not actually really being fully fleshed out or transparent. And they have carte blanche to bully tech companies, and they're also threatening them with hefty fines if they don't follow these rules. And it's a little bit more complicated in America because America has the First Amendment. They have a constitution that somewhat guarantees them certain inalienable rights. But here in Europe, we ain't got that shit. So our governments are already rolling through legislation.
Yeah. Well, I mean, now Jen Wazowski or whatever her name is can just amend your tweets for you.
Yeah, literally.
You know, she can amend your First Amendment, bro.
Didn't mean to say that, Angie. Didn't mean to say that. I don't know, man. It's fucking crazy. And like, yeah, more people should be...
The Illuminati is a conspiracy.
Oh my God, it's crazy. I don't know what the fuck's going to happen, but it feels like Ingsoc, the fucking thing from 1984, is like already here, basically.
Yeah, it's terrifying. It just keeps getting worse.
Yeah.
That's why I feel like something's got to give. Like, you can't have all of these mounting pressures, like a pressure cooker, pressure cooker, pressure cooker. Like, it doesn't, like, I don't know, the way history's talked about in other decades, it doesn't feel like it was really like that.
Yeah.
Whereas now it feels like everything is like building to this point where something has to give and there's going to be like a breaking point.
But how do you know that that breaking point will lead to something positive, or how do you know it won't lead to something negative? Because many times in history where there's been breaking points, it's led to catastrophe.
Yeah.
Like World War, you know, after the aftermath of World War One in Germany was what led to the rise of the Third Reich, for fuck's sake.
Yeah. Well, that's the scary thing.
Yeah.
Like you're hoping for the best. But what I'm seeing is like the feeling that I've got is that it's sort of like something has to give.
Yeah.
Because you can't make so many people like so mentally ill and destitute and fucking financially fucked up.
And then we also don't even have the means to discuss or express our frustrations now.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
Disney fucking demon possessed freaks. The story witch is going to come and censor your tweets.
He's going to come and correct your narrative.
Like, what the fuck, dude?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even care about, like, most other political issues right now. The thing I care about the most is this. Because if you can't even dissent, how is any grander political project even possible?
Yeah.
What's the point?
It has to be a breakaway civilization. Maybe we have to wait for the billionaires to go to Mars so we can kind of like reorganize
Earth. Shit in the dust bowl. Or maybe
they'll leave like fucking their like old sex robots and upgrade them with Skynet AI so they can be the bosses and report back to them on Earth and still keep us as like fucking meat slaves.
I want like a cruel animus, like Kevin Samuels, like robot. Like they just resurrect him and he's like, "Hey, Angie, how much do you weigh? I think you're a 6 at best."
Oh, sweet pea, don't say that.
So you can bully me into self-improvement. Be like, hey, toots, you're getting closer to 30. time to procreate.
That it rarely ever works that way.
Oh my God. But yeah, I don't know what the fuck's gonna happen. I mean, I hope more people wake up to this and put aside their petty differences so that we can form some kind of coalition to combat this shit.
Yeah.
Like there are several major like foundational issues that are being sort of pulled, the rug is being pulled out from under us on these like foundational issues. Things like our ability to dissent, things like free speech, things like the economy, things like our ability to find housing, provide, like all the basic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And this is stuff that we should be forming political coalitions around regardless of our petty differences.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, we're too busy being divided on everything else. Like, this is an emergency. We're in an emergency fucking moment.
We're in Crisisville.
We are.
Population, all of us.
Exactly. Which is kind of what I see. And, like, I feel like, I don't know, people would rather see, it's like the, what's it called? Like, people would rather see the world, it's like the Joker, just want to see the world burn thing.
Yeah.
I know that that's kind of pessimistic, but I feel like a lot of people are just more willing to, like...
The thing is, like, I know it's not going to be like Fallout, bro. you know, it's going to be hard. It's not going to be fun.
It's not going to be
It's not going to be like, oh, and jingle, jangle, jingle, like popping along, to finding 50s bottle jazz. Caps, fucking like scavenging shit. Like, dude, it's going to be hard. Like, life will be really hard if like society collapses and that's what like the breaking point ends up being.
Yeah.
And, like all of the yeah. sort of like global infrastructure like breaks down and like, you know, bad things happen.
Yeah.
That won't be fucking good. Or, yeah. you know, there's all sorts of really bad potential things that could, like, right on the horizon that I shan't dare say. But, like, you know, you can only hope for the best. And yeah. you got to hope that, like, something does, like, finally just go, dude, this is fucking way too much. We got to
reel
it back. Put the fucking brakes on this. Like, we got to just recalibrate what's the fucking goal, what are we doing right now?
Yeah.
Because this is getting fucking crazy.
It is getting fucking crazy. And that's why everyone's going fucking crazy as well. Like, yeah. that's why, like, mental health crisis is on a is on the rise. Everybody's insular and brittle and snappy and stuff. And it's also, I think also post-COVID has ramped that up because people were sort of tucked away for 2 years nursing their like neuroses. And now we're being faced with like going back into the real world. And I think a lot of people are struggling. A lot of people are really struggling adjusting back to life. And yeah, I feel like that's why things are ramping up. And that as well as the really precarious political situation that we're in at the moment and all the stuff that's going on. It's just adding gasoline to a pressure cooker. So, you know, I'm not trying to give you any podcast advice.
Yeah, I'm not trying to be a doomer. It's
I'm
just
not
like,
trying to be a doomer, but I'm just saying, like, take care of your spirit, dude. Yeah. Take care of your mind. Take care of your body. Take care of your spirit more than ever, because your life literally depends on it.
Yeah,
your sanity depends on it. The happiness and safety of those around you, those who depend on you, also depend on it as well. You got to keep yourself fucking whole somehow.
Do what you need to survive and then spend the rest of your time doing what you love, man.
Because
you know, that's the only way to feel good these days, I feel like.
Exactly. On a more positive note, to round out this episode, Jake and I did like a dumb personality quiz. Because we were bored and it was like really funny results. What's the name of the personality quiz again?
Open Psychometrics.
Yeah, that's the name of it.
And you basically answer a whole bunch of like, you know, Scientology type personality. just like a little personality test.
It was
like,
when we were
how
on
do you feel
train.
About such and such and such and such? And then it will like plot you in this thing and then map it to all of these characters in fictional stories.
We
and
were
stuff.
Bored on the train on our way back to London from seeing our old friends, and we decided we were going to do it. And it's actually kind of spot on, but I was also kind of pissed off with a lot of the characters I got, because I got a lot of like villains and bad guys and BPD hoes, and Jake got like all the good guys.
I got a lot of heroes and like main characters and like, you know, cool people.
Oh my God. Okay, so I got Sully from X-Files, which a lot of people say, I've not actually seen X-Files, and a lot of people have been saying I should watch it, and I feel like we would love it.
Mm.
I don't know why we haven't seen it yet.
We should watch it.
Yeah, it's like Schizo, and like, it's like a success, it's like the spiritual cousin to Twin Peaks, and it's from that era, and we haven't seen it. I got Sully, I got Lady Melisandre as well, and like fucking, like evil people, Azula. Azula from Avatar. Yeah.
So like my top ones that I actually recognize are Mark Watney from The Martian. Fucking.
I don't know who that is. Who's that?
You know the film, The Martian?
Mm-mm.
Where the guy was going to.
Growing poop potatoes?
Yeah, growing potatoes.
Oh, yeah, you would definitely grow poop potatoes on the moon. I could see that.
Yeah. And then the next one that I actually recognize, Remy from Ratatouille.
That makes a lot of sense. Because you like cooking and you're like really
Jack
weird.
Jack Dawson from Titanic.
Oh, yeah, I could see that. He has Sagittarius energy for sure.
Marty McFly. Gandalf and Aang.
Yeah,
and,
why do you...
And Iroh. I got Aang and Iroh like equal percentage.
Why do you get all the good guys and I get like crazy bitches? I got Cersei from Game of Thrones. I got Lady Melisandre. I got Sabrina Spellman. I got Mandy from The Grim Adventures of Billy and Mandy as well. I got Raven from Teen Titans. Like all these like broody, like villainous characters. Yeah.
Again, so Robin Hood. Ash Ketchum.
Oh my god.
And the genie from Aladdin.
It really isn't fair that you get like all the heroes and all the people everyone likes. I get like all these like horrible, like crazy whammen. It's not fair. I also got Lilo from Lilo and Stitch, but that one resonates with me because Lilo is definitely my inner child. I cry every time I watch that movie.
I got Andy Dufresne or whatever from Shawshank Redemption, like the main dude in Shawshank Redemption.
Oh my god, are you proud of yourself?
That's pretty dark.
Are you proud of yourself?
Oh, and Luke Skywalker. There we go.
What the fuck?
Let's finish off with that.
The one that offended me the most is Azula. I'm not fucking Azula.
You got Azula and I got Aang and Iroh.
That's not right. I really don't think that's fucking fair.
It's pretty accurate.
How is it accurate? I'm lovely.
You're kind of like
I'm a little bit intense.
Yeah.
And like, but I don't think I'm like criminally insane.
I wouldn't say you're criminally insane.
Like Azula is like criminally insane.
I'd say like Azula's like on your bad day when all the winds are against you and you're just like, oh, that's when you're definitely Azula. But like a lot of the time you're Katara.
You think I'm Katara?
Yeah.
I fucking hate Katara. She's such a fucking busybody. No way.
Well, it's not that you're a busybody, but she's like she's really well meaning. She's like really,
she's like
she cares.
Passionate about social justice.
You know, kind of, but not in a lame way.
She's also really overly sincere in the like,
yeah.
Oh my god,
You're the sincere bear.
I prefer Melisandre. I could vibe with Melisandre, like being like a fucking like magical
witchy witch,
like but also like a zealot, like a religious extremist. Zealot.
Oh dear.
Would that make you Stannis?
That would make my wee wee go inside itself.
What, you don't like Melisandre?
No,
I think she's hot.
I think she's hot, but like if you were like a religious zealot.
Like Melisandre?
Yeah, that would make my dick go inside.
But what if I wasn't a religious zealot about like a mainstream religion? What if I was like
Well, you're like a Scientologist.
No, like if I worshipped like Zoroaster or something.
Some really like witchy shit.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you'd still be a zealot and it would still kind of get me soft.
No, I don't think so. I think I would put on like a hot red bitch outfit, get my tits out and like brainwash you and tell you that you're the prince that was promised.
Oh my god.
And I think you would buy it all hook, line and sinker and be rock hard all the while.
Oh my god.
That's Melisandre's fun. I don't hate Melisandre, but I do hate the comparison to Cersei. Cersei's also kind of criminally insane. I'm not criminally insane. Like, what the fuck?
Is this red flags that are being presented to me right now in this psychoanalysis Scientology test?
Wait, you got all the green flags and I got all the red flags. Jesus Christ.
Well, you know, I guess we balance each other out.
Perfect balance of good and evil. Well, thank you guys for listening to this podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. And if you want more from us, we got a bonus episode on the way on Patreon. We also have a new book club and we also have a Discord where you can come chat to us, hang out, talk about everything, life, politics, TV shows, movies, whatever the fuck. Hang out with us. Chat to you guys later. Goodbye.
Bye.